It was a pyramid scheme involving money, power, and the sexual abuse of dozens of underage girls that went on for years. And behind it all was a well-connected billionaire hedge fund manager and sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein. On Tuesday, Epstein struck a last-minute settlement in a civil suit connected to his crimes that prevented his victims from testifying. But the case has a long backstory. In 2007, federal prosecutors in Florida struck a plea deal with Epstein. Authorities could have sent him to prison for life, but instead, he walked away after having served a lenient 13-month sentence. But just how Epstein was able to do that is a case study in the role money and influence can play in the U.S. criminal justice system. Last week, an investigation from the Miami Herald revealed a coordinated effort to keep Epstein's victims in the dark about that plea deal, which was made by Alexander Acosta, then U.S. Attorney for Southern Florida. Does that name sound familiar? Well, Acosta is currently the labor secretary under the Trump administration, and he's among Epstein's long list of influential acquaintances, which includes power players from Presidents Bill Clinton and Donald Trump to celebrities. And to put these new revelations in context, I spoke with Anna North, a senior reporter for Vox who covers gender issues, and she told me that many of Epstein's exploits had been public knowledge for some time.
There had been sort of speculation for years swirling around Jeffrey Epstein concerning he'd been quite open about his predilection for very young women. There's, I believe it's in a Vanity Fair story, a quote where I believe Michael Wolff says that at one point Epstein told him, you know, what can I say? I like young girls. And Michael Wolff says, well, maybe you should say young women. You know, maybe you shouldn't be so explicit about this. So there's been, well before Julie Brown's wonderful report in the Herald, there's been a lot out there on him.
Remind us again, Jeffrey Epstein, sort of what does he do and who is he connected to more broadly?
Sure. So he is a money manager. And because of his role managing, you know, very large accounts, he came into contact with a number of powerful men, including Bill Clinton, including Donald Trump. They, you know, at various times were friendly or connected with him. He talked a lot about his sort of collection of famous friends. And that includes a lot of people who are very powerful.
And it's not just the crimes. I mean, the extent of what he was able to get away with is pretty stunning, out in the open and casual and horrendous at the same time. I mean, what does this tell us about how power is operating at that level?
Right. I mean, I think I should say, too, just a little more about how striking the allegations were that were revealed in the Herald report. I mean, another thing that Brown talks about is the allegation that essentially Epstein was running, quote, a sexual pyramid scheme where he would abuse girls and then send them out to recruit other girls. It's this really, you know, authorities in Florida had been able to uncover a number of really, really disturbing allegations. But then what happened was that Epstein was able to hire this really high-profile team of lawyers, including Alan Dershowitz and including actually Kenneth Starr, who, you know, of course, was involved with investigating Bill Clinton. They, according to the Herald at least, investigated not only the women who were accusing Epstein, but also the authorities who were investigating Epstein. And so really what it looks like from the reporting is this very intense campaign of intimidation that Epstein was able to run, in part because he had the money and power to hire this very high-profile team.
What do we know about the girls and the young women? Who were they? Was there a demographic profile of these young women?
Yes. So according to Brown, it looks like the women who say they were targeted were often from poverty-stricken homes. They sometimes came from foster care. They were girls and young women who were poor, who needed the money that Epstein frequently would allegedly offer them. We've seen something of a pattern come forward, I think, in Me Too, that often someone who's a predator will target people that they know will not be believed if they speak up. And I think a lot of these young women fit that profile.
There was supposed to be a civil case on Tuesday where victims could have offered testimony. It did not happen. What happened instead?
That's correct. So this particular case was not exactly between him and the women. It was actually between him and another lawyer. This could have been the first time that some of these women would have been able to testify in court, and the public potentially really could have learned a lot more details that we haven't known about this case. Instead, Epstein reached an 11th-hour settlement that prevented anyone from testifying, and we don't know all the details of what that settlement was because they're not public. But crucially, there's a second case that is still on ongoing. That's a federal case in which some of the women who have accused Epstein actually are suing and saying that the plea deal was illegal and should be vacated.
There's another player in this story, Alexander Acosta. He is the current Secretary of Labor in the Trump administration. What do we know about his role in this Epstein case?
Epstein faced this federal indictment that was quite extensive, and he could have been sent to prison for a long time. Instead, what happened was that he was able to reach a plea agreement where he served 13 months. He was in a county jail, not a state or federal prison. He actually was able to get work release to go into an office for several days per week. And all of this was signed off on by Acosta, who now is the Secretary of Labor in the Trump administration.
We're seeing a number of different patterns develop among high-profile men. I'm wondering, we've seen this happen with Harvey Weinstein. Hearing about this case brought up memories of the Larry Nassar case. What are we seeing in terms of broader patterns here? Because this isn't something that happened. These aren't one-offs. This is decades of abuse.
Right. I think there's two things that we're really seeing come to the fore as a result of Me Too. One is frankly kind of upsetting, which is that it often takes many, many allegations by women or girls for anything to stick or for a powerful man to really face consequences. I mean, we saw that with Harvey Weinstein where, you know, things, rumors had been swirling for years. Finally, a few women came forward and then it became more and more and more. And it finally sort of kicked the Me Too movement, which of course had been going on for a long time. It kicked it into this new, very public phase. We've seen that with Larry Nassar, where girls and women were speaking up for years, reporting what was happening, and nothing really happened until finally, you know, the Indianapolis Star was able to uncover some things. And then we saw hundreds of women end up testifying at Nassar's sentencing. So it really is this feeling that, you know, one woman's word isn't enough. You need dozens or even hundreds. The flip side of that, that's kind of, I think, encouraging, is that as part of Me Too, dozens and hundreds of women are coming forward. They feel like finally they can, and so they're adding their voices to those voices that were already out there.
I want to go a little deeper there, because how and where is the hope for systemic reform when, as we mentioned, Acosta is part of the current administration? So I'm worried that, you know, is all of this actually going to make a difference?
It is hard to think about this in an administration where, of course, as we know, the president is also the subject of sexual misconduct allegations. So there's a lot of troubling things going on here. I will say that I think the Weinstein case in particular has brought up some interesting possibilities for reform. There's been a lot of talk about what to do with non-disclosure agreements. That's been less of a public issue in the Epstein case, but certainly in the Weinstein case, there were non-disclosure agreements signed that prevented women from talking for a long time. And there are a lot of legal questions now about whether those are legal and whether they should be legal. And I think we're having important debates about, like, can you pay someone for their silence and should you be able to?
Anna North is a senior reporter for Vox who covers gender issues. Anna, thanks so much.
Thank you.